He's really deep in thought. Should we just stand up and start this talk?
He's got special hearing. Okay. Legislator Lips.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay. I am looking for a motion for approval of the May 8th, 2023 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any changes, questions?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. All right, I'll call the call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Resolution number 305, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $56,000, entered into by the county with C&S Engineers, Inc. Motion for discussion?
So moved.
Second.
Legislator Lips, seconded by Legislator Erner.
This originally
the records show that Legislator Nolan has come in. Did you have any questions on it?
Yeah, it was originally for $37,500, and now it's $56,000.
Should I resend it?
What's the increase?
They did a new topography survey, additional geotechnical investigations, additional balloon floats, meetings for additional permitting requirements, additional boundary surveying, and expanded site conception drawings.
Okay.
So, yeah. And we don't have anybody from Public Works here, huh?
This is,
It's 305.
Amending by adding $56,000 to the contract with C&S. Public safety radio tower.
Dennis is going to update today, so if I would suggest that we I'll make sure that he's coming. But Dennis is coming to speak to it.
He was. Okay, so do you want to move this further down on the agenda? We'll move
take
on
no
to the
action.
Next. Take no action
yeah.
right now and then bring
sure.
it up. Okay.
There's a motion in a second. And when he comes, he can give us the explanation. And, we'll
and then we can do the vote.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. All right, on to resolution number 322, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the town of... Oh, would you... Okay.
I move we block this resolution through 326, next five resolutions.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to block resolutions three?
I'll second Legislator Erner's motion to block.
Okay. And on the motion to block, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. So on the block, does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Legislator Erner.
Yeah, I actually have one on each, so maybe I shouldn't have moved the block. But the first one seems to have some redacts. It's about Gardner. Do we know what was redacted and why?
Oh, I'm glad to answer it. Not a problem. I actually redacted the back end. So they had like a significant study done for their town on improvements to be made. And one portion of that study, which is fully in the contract. I basically just wanted to redact the parts that didn't apply to the project because it was like the entire, you know, municipal system of the town. And I basically just blocked it out. I discovered how to do it, and I was excited about it, for one thing. And so you basically, it will just show you what you need to know as to why I did that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, Bartel.
And if you need to see like actual copy of those pages without redactions, then just to be sure, I do not mind sharing that anyway. So.
I was just going to suggest maybe we include the full contract, the unredacted version, just in our internal records, so
for
that if anyone ever were to look back and later wonder why there's huge redactions on a public record, it would be there.
That's
a very good idea, yeah.
Not a problem. It's a draft currently, and I basically would just take the full pages and I can do that.
Because I would imagine you're using pretty much a standard contract, and then if all of the legal language isn't required, that's what you're redacting back out?
Yeah, I would just be basically erasing those pages with, we use Adobe Pro, and then just taking from the PDF without any redactions and popping that back in so that it's all transparent.
Okay, thank you. Question on another resolution? Same one?
Mm-hmm. On 324 now, for Sean Gum, it seems that we anticipate Orange County to have some usage and also make some contributions. Is that correct?
So we're asking about Sean Gum?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
Sean Gum, he has the correct
Sean
pronunciation.
Gum.
Sean Gum.
So the question is regarding the sources?
I saw something in there that Orange County would be involved. It looked like making some contribution and anticipating some usage of what we were doing there. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, sorry, I don't have the contract in front of me. I think I'd have to look at it.
I thought that was a possibility. I didn't know it was actually written in at this point.
Yeah, so that part of the contract, I mean, I think I should say for all of them, some are further along than others. As best as I'm able, I'm trying to capture the anticipated sources or the actual sources, and there's a bit of both. But certainly as on to the point of Orange County sources, I can look at that further and try to get back to you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
No, it's just you.
Thanks. On 325, this is what we're seeing. And part of this has to do, I'm sure, with my own ignorance about how projects work. There's no engineering listed for under costs, but then it's all construction costs. Some of the other projects have construction engineering versus the actual construction. Is this...
So we're talking about World War Sing 325, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a... I'm going off memory here a little bit, but this is a smaller project. What's interesting to share about World War Sing is they're done with the project, to be honest. And that was, so I'm kind of just giving you the overview of how this contract developed. I only discovered that once I started drafting and talking a little further. It is a new well pump, I believe. I made sure that we got from their engineer their seeker documents because I wanted to be sure that they'd at least gone through the right processes. And that's what I'm looking to do. I'm open to creating the contract, reimbursing them on funds, and that's, to me, that's the trick with this contract. But your question, forgive me, was on...
Well, I know engineering costs and only construction costs.
Yeah, I think we're pretty... I can find out further about that.
Could it have been because they already were done and just didn't...
Done
that's
it.
What
yeah.
I'm thinking, and that's one reason why... Yes, exactly
yeah.
why I wanted to share that. I mean, they did put in their... We're going off their cost estimate. They have every incentive with this program to potentially, particularly because they're under the $500,000, to push their costs higher if they're actual and legitimate costs for the project. So my thinking is that there's probably a very good reason why there's no engineering costs in there, and particularly from what I've heard that they've already completed, I think we're the match and... the existing 67% that they have to contribute, our 33%, their 67%, I think is all lined up, I guess is the right thing. But I don't know. I can't answer to the heart to the explicit question, but I could check on that for sure.
Okay.
Last one. So for the Woodstock one, can you comment on, I see, gallons per minute and day statistics. How many people are we serving from this? How residences, businesses, what types, generally, if you know?
For Woodstock?
Yeah.
326? I don't have that with me. I'm sorry. It is like, and I think there's more than one source for their well water, but it is one of the primary. There's two wells and they're going to connect them, and it's one of the primary sources. I can get back to you with
probably between about 10 and 15,000 people. That's the population, and I think most of the people in Woodstock are served by the wells at the Bearsville Flat. So we can get confirmation, but I think
public
it would
worship
be
like that is available online from the health department. You can look it up, and you can look up the number of connections and the number of people served.
And a lot of that was something we asked in our application, so I'd be going back and potentially seeing how they answer this.
Thank you all.
So I'm sorry, there's three questions, and I wrote them down.
Are you comfortable moving forward? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm going to call the vote on the block. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Alrighty, moving on.
Could we return
yes,
to resolution 305?
So resolution 305, do we need to move it back since we took no action? Okay. Legislator Litz, Director Doyle had questions on the engineering and the
opposite ways away.
Went from 37.5 to 56.
Oh, okay.
Okay. In the resolution it says
that was the original estimate for the increase services.
Right.
So that's the change. It's not the change in the total contract, it's a change from the original estimate.
Okay.
So what we did is we looked at trying to essentially add 40 feet to an existing tower that's a guide tower.
Mm-hmm.
When we went through that process and looked at the structural loading on the tower, we were at 100% with the existing loading on the tower, which meant that our emergency services folks were not comfortable building a tower that was 100% loaded when we finished it. So we're now looking at a new tower rather than an extension on the existing tower, which means we have to do some of the work that we've done over again, in particular some of the geotech work. In order for that tower, and we're making up our minds as to whether or not it would be a self-supporting structure or a guide structure that we're looking at right now. One of the problems we're having with the site is you can't get to it. It runs through a courtyard, and you literally can't get a cement truck underneath the courtyard. So we're working with a number of ways to try to figure out how to get all the material that we may need if we do a self-supporting structure versus a guide structure. I'm not sure we're going to spend all of this money. The one reason I don't know whether we'll spend all the money is that we do have additional balloon floats and additional photo simulations in this budget. If we're close to where the existing tower, we had photos from the existing tower, we won't have to redo the balloon float and the photo simulations, which would save us probably $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 on that. We scheduled a site visit with some of the contractors that would build the tower, so that they can give us an idea in terms of how close we can put it to the existing tower. There's just no room up here for lay down areas, and we're really concerned about the guide structure, making sure that we don't disturb any of the guides. We build too close to the existing structure. So that's the reason for the increase and some of the explanation behind it.
Sounds good.
Can I stop?
Yes,
Chair Bartow?
So the changes that you're describing, are we still dealing with estimated costs, or you know that's what the changes are going to cost?
These are only design costs, so we know what these are going to cost. It's just that we don't know whether we have to do all of the things that are in that menu of tasks.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
anything? And we need to, I'm very happy that they realized that they were at capacity and that they're building so that they can add to it, because it just seems to be a trend lately that you build it so it's just big enough and then in 10 years you're in trouble again.
We've also had started consultation with Verizon, who's looking for a tower in this area. And so they may be able to co-locate if we build on another tower. So that was the other reason to proceed in this way, that for co-location, for cell coverage in the area. We've had conversations. The land is owned by a trust. The trust actually donates the land to us, Pitcairn Trust. We have an easement on for the Pitcairn Trust. We've had continuing conversations with the Pitcairn Trust folks. They're more than willing to allow a cell carrier on there. We may have to work out some revenue sharing with the trust if they go on.
Okay. All right, if there are no other questions, I'll call the vote on 305. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, next, where are we?
332.
Okay. Number 332, approving an increase in funding for capital project number 541, SUNY Ulster Facilities Equipment, and amending the 2023 Ulster County Capital Fund. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay, Legislator Arner. I have questions on this because it's fleet. And we do approve their budget, so why are they not putting this into their budget, and why is it part of, I mean, why is there additional funding, I guess is my question. Shouldn't they have prepared and put in, and I think I'll have that same question on the signage as well. Why aren't they budgeting for this, for capital improvement?
I can attempt an answer. I know that from capital budgets with respect to the SUNY system, they actually get reimbursed for capital expenditures, where they don't get reimbursed under the I don't believe they get reimbursed under the operating expenses. That may help you understand why they put it in capital. The reimbursement rates, I believe, are somewhere in between the 45% and 50%. So that may be why they're doing it. I don't know for sure that that's the case.
We don't have anyone here to answer that question.
I had a question as well.
I know they're eligible for 50%. I suspect that's why they put it in capital.
Legislator Arner.
Something I read suggested that this was the case, but can we confirm these vehicles are used for Kingston as well as the Stone Ridge campus?
We can ask. I mean,
DPW.
Is the minivan, or the minivans rather, for transporting students, faculty, other people, or what do we use those for?
They're typically used for field trips, for sports teams, etc. They have a wheeled passenger van.
And the answer to the first question about both campuses is yes. Is that what we were hearing over here?
My understanding is that DPW actually plows the Kingston campus because of the distance from the campus. They don't maintain vehicles at the campus, at the city campus.
Legislator Arner, was there a list of vehicles included in?
Yes.
Thank you.
And while you're looking,
yes,
I may, the minivan hybrids 57K, do we know how that would compare to buying other types of fueled vehicles? I know we have a policy that says we have to move in that direction. But
I did look that up. So for that purpose, there's only one plug-in hybrid minivan on the market, and that is the Chrysler Pacifica. So that is the only option for that. And they are just kind of starting to engage in the green fleet. You know, there's also some trucks and some plow trucks on the list, which there aren't feasible green options for right now, but it is what they, for a minivan, that is what's on the market that is either the it is at all green.
So I'd like to follow on with that and suggest that if we have questions about price of vehicles that are hybrid or electric, that we not only look at purchase price, but look at 5 or 10 year operating, because part of the cost of the vehicle is recovered because of the reduced operating costs over time, both in terms of fuel, but also in terms of not requiring the same kinds of maintenance, oil changes, and things like that.
Chair Bartow.
Thank you. Yeah, and I just want to also state, which I've said before, that I hope that we're looking and that the college is looking at on-site high-speed charging, taking advantage of mm-hmm. grants that are out there, maybe both for internal use, but certainly for public-facing use. It's a very centrally located location, mm-hmm. and I think now is the time, obviously, to really be aggressive about trying to, and the fact that the college could be potentially separately applying from us, even though we're connected, would seem like maybe we can maximize getting as much as we could into Ulster County.
That's a good point. We have been successful in the past applying for SDDC grants to cover the cost of level 2 chargers, mm-hmm. and the county was instrumental to getting the chargers that are on the campus right now. I am in the process of setting up a meeting staff from Ulster to talk about energy green fleet, and we'll definitely add additional charging to the list.
Yeah, and if I may, if you could also think about engaging the other public education institutions, OCs and SUNY Ulster and SUNY New Paltz, to whatever extent. I know they're autonomous, but again, I think to whatever extent that we can work together to facilitate helping to get these things out there, we realize the aggressive, there's so much money, as we know, from the federal government that's being proposed, but the aggressive rollout that has to happen for these high-speed chargers, for just even based on what the manufacturers are saying, committing to in terms of the drop-dead date on gasoline vehicles, there's nowhere near, other than for one manufacturer, which right now is the only one that's allowed to charge at their station, there's nowhere near the capacity right now. Nowhere near. And I'm not saying, I'm not a doomsday player. I believe there is. I just think we need to take advantage of this moment in time when there is money out there to make it happen. And I don't think we should think of ourselves as being in competition with these institutions. Mm-hmm. I think more is more and better is better, particularly as it relates to public facing.
And if I may, just that, you know, SUNY Ulster isn't here tonight, but, you know, it takes a lot of capacity to really get aggressive about going after these opportunities and figure out which ones are the right fit and that you can move on right away. For example, NYSERDA has right now 75%, 25% match for an energy manager. That would be a great, I think, opportunity to evaluate with SUNY Ulster. So I think looking at the opportunities there, but also looking at the challenge, you know, that'll definitely be something to discuss as to how can we, you know, is that additional capacity on the SUNY Ulster side? Is that some support from the county?
Yeah.
But it takes like somebody who's focused and to really drill down into this grant and to get an energy manager, and there's a lot of opportunities there, and I think the time is like
right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we put forward those grant managers in the budget last year, for this year, we had contemplated and discussed the idea of that being an opportunity, a kind of a shared services, that being an opportunity to really work with the municipalities. I think that extends to these educational institutions. Again, I think this is where we have to build capacity really quickly, and I hear you on the capacity issue, but we will miss out on opportunities if we don't fill capacity, and I want to see that happen for not only our municipalities, but for these educational institutions and basically anywhere in Ulster County, anywhere that we're availing ourselves of those opportunities, it's a win for everyone. So, because this is coming for real.
I'd just like to add that, you know, as it is coming, we also have to look at being able to generate the energy, you know, not just the infrastructure, because, you know, it's fossil fuels and coal still is how we're generating our electric. And I think that's one of my concerns, is I see the state wanting to go all electric and you know, no more fossil fuel cars after 2030. Fine, but the cost is going to be so crazy that, I mean, you can't even pay to keep the electric on in your house, much less put it into a vehicle so that you can get around. I'd like to see more solar canopies and anything that we could, that we're pulling ourselves off the grid, so to speak. Legislator Earner, did you?
I mean, I'll go you one further, Chair Petit. I mean, we have to...
Yes,
we're consuming a whole lot as a society, and we need to look at who's doing that consuming and why, and cutting it down. That's obviously a larger discussion, but I think it speaks to your point and yours, Chair Bartels, about the transition, making it a just transition, making it so that those who've had the least access to energy, transportation, and whatever we're using it for are prioritized in that build-out that we're doing.
I would just note that in New York State, we do have a fair component of hydroelectric, and that helps to make our drawing from the grid during this transition not quite as problematic. But gearing up on both solar and wind, geothermal for buildings, and air source pumps, which draw from electric, all of those approaches we need to be pushing on.
Thank you. Okay, all right, we need to call the vote on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Yes, ma'am.
No, I'd like to also note that I'm voting yes on the minutes, to approve the minutes,
good,
which happened at the beginning of the meeting before I arrived.
All right, moving on to resolution number 334, establishing a capital project number 672. SUNY Ulster, wayfinding, amending the 2023 capital fund budget.
I'll move it.
Second? Legislator Earner? Thank you. Any discussion on this? Legislator Earner?
Thank you. Can we, do we know, and I know nobody's here from SUNY Ulster, but do we know about how many signs we're going to put up, whether they're traditional or electronic, the timeline for their erection, and the anticipated longevity? Those are my questions.
I can attempt that, because I attended the meeting where they talked about this, and I don't know how many signs, but I know that they're talking about wayfinding signage on campus, so it's not off campus, it's on campus, and they're also talking about trying to figure out a kiosk form where you can go in and you can start asking questions in terms of find your building, find your class, those kinds of things. So that's the electronic piece. But other than that, I believe the signs are regular types of signs. They're not all electronic signs.
Any other questions? Chair Bartels.
Following on Legislator Earner's question, I'm okay with moving on this, generally in support of, you know, the college's initiatives and understanding that, you know, it's funded by the state. But it would be great to see a little more detail on what they're actually proposing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a significant amount of money for on-campus science. I'm not questioning them, but I'd love to see the I'm assuming there's detail somewhere.
Yeah, the president
it's not in our
of the other meeting, she explained it quite well. I don't want to put words in her mouth, so I'll be very brief in my explanation.
Yeah, it's just not in the packet. So maybe if we could, I will support it.
Okay.
Regardless.
Able to send a note out and ask for, you know,
yeah, and I was just texting Natalie to make sure that they're at
Thank you.
Your Ways and Means meeting.
Thank you.
And also, could you forward to this board? Thank you.
Of course.
I would note that they haven't done this in a long time.
Oh,
so
sure.
It needs to be done.
Yeah, I think most of their focus has been doors and windows and roofs and,
Got to help to move people around on campus.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 337, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the City of Kingston, where the county is a subrecipient of the city's ARPA SLFRF funds for the renovation of Elizabeth Manor. Motion for discussion?
I'm very happy to move it.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Erner. Yes, chair.
So, you know, I followed the back and forth email in relation to the timeline. I, too, am concerned about the timeline on this. You know, when we talk about urgency, you know, this is something we moved on, and I do feel like we have to find a way to shorten that timeline. It's really long. I also am not, I understand that we're a subrecipient of Kingston's ARPA funds, but I'm not quite clear on, is it running through our, it seems like it's running through our ARPA division, which once it comes to us, I don't know why it's not running through Public Works. Like, Public Works is, it's a Public Works project, not an ARPA project. I get
that question was brought up in the Health Committee as well.
I'm just not getting it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if someone can.
I think you've got enough on your plate already.
Sure. So, I don't know that I have the best answer for that, to be honest. I think it is a reasonable question, but I can say that it started with ARPA funds, and the our division was designated at that point to be project management for the project, and you know, we're happy to continue until we hear otherwise, and I think. So that's really my answer.
And if I could add to that, I believe you also said, because it is ARPA funds, there's all of the reporting and everything, so it just naturally seemed to fit in with that department.
Again, I'm going to say, like, I don't have a problem with the intermunicipal agreement in general, although I'm going to have to look closer at the detail in terms of how it relates to the ARPA division being the project manager. But I'm not really sold on the ARPA division, no offense, being a project manager on a capital project.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You're doing great work, and you have a lot of work to do. And it's, you know what I mean, you're on some level, you're at capacity. We're waiting now for more of these water and sewer projects, right? Isn't there another month of them?
I think there's another five that are left. There were 13.
We have a public works, We have a public works division. You would think that a capital project would be managed. I totally understand the reporting being done through ARPA, if that's appropriate, but a capital project would be managed by the people who are expert in managing capital projects. I mean, this is the part that I don't understand, and then we find it's going to take 2 or 3 years. That seems just a little, and I'm not saying that's ARPA's fault. I'm just saying it seems a very big disconnect to me.
So I think this is a reasonable point, and I would imagine the executive staff will be open to looking at it again in terms of, you know, where it makes the most sense. In terms of the timeline, you know, a large part of delay is in a project like this, a public project, is all of these contracts coming to the legislature and working through our process. So we had the purchase of the building, and that takes longer than if a private entity were going to go do that. Now that the building is purchased, there's an 18-month timeline. There's some additional time that would be built in if the funding streams that we have to pull in for the project are the ones that take longer. So I think that it's a reasonable estimate rather than an unreasonable estimate that we then fail to meet. And I think it builds in the appropriate levels of review for a public project of this size. So I do think we are in an, I know as well as anybody, we're in an urgent situation for housing. At the same time, we can't, in 18 months, undo years of prior not moving forward with similar projects. So I think we push on this and we look for the best management, the good suggestions. At the same time, you know, taking money that City of Kingston is receiving from ARPA and putting it towards this project, which will be in the City of Kingston, makes a lot of sense to me. So I think we ought to, as quickly as possible, move forward each part of it that comes to the legislature. That's one of the things we can do to address that time lag.
Chair Bartel.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the timeline. I can't find it easily in my email, but I never mean to suggest, I'm never thinking in terms of a rush to undo years of inaction. Like, I never think in terms of 18 months to undo years of inaction. I honestly am looking at the project in a vacuum and saying, looking at this timeline, it seems way too long. It just, you know, we're missing this whole building season, and now we're going to the next whole building season, and again, I'm being told that the project manager is taken out of our public works, and it's going to be ARPA. Makes total sense for ARPA to be reporting on it. Makes total sense for ARPA to have a hand in it, but not to be the project managers. It was very specific. Going back to the days of the jail debacle, of being really clear on project managers on capital projects. Nate in his honesty is not providing really a comfortable answer about why it's not public works and why it's ARPA. It's sort of like, I'm not sure why it's ARPA. You know, it's like it was given to us.
And to answer that, so in the beginning there was a view towards, I mean, not just City of Kingston, but funding, but also HHAP, and I have done an HHAP application, so that is part of my background experience, and was happy to utilize it. I think there is a push to move this as fast as possible, so my advice was to have a decision point between HHAP versus county funds. So I think it's heading in a direction away from HHAP.
What's the timeline on HHAP?
Well, HHAP, I roughly anticipate, would be an additional 6 to 12 months.
I'm sorry, what does that stand for?
Oh, sorry, Homeless Housing Assistance Program.
Thank you.
Has that application been filed?
So I don't want to get too off topic, but this is just looking at, a lot of times in projects there's time versus money, and there's a choice between moving at the fastest potential, which I believe would be through county funds, or going through HHAP. Either way, HHAP is not ARPA funds. They're not exactly related. So, but I'm just trying to answer why we were brought in early on, and it was specifically because I had more of a back. I believe it was more towards the fact that I had a background in HHAP and was able to help in that capacity. Things do change. I totally agree.
I don't even see HHAP in this timeline.
So HHAP is not something we're pursuing because we want to pursue as fast as possible.
But as fast as possible is putting us, you know, at a 3-year turn.
Right, and we could have an additional 6 to 12 months potentially with HHAP.
That's what I'm saying. It seems crazy to me.
Is that something we could collaborate with planning? I mean, Kai is he not a grant writer. Okay, because he's just amazing with housing.
I think the things that got discussed by Nate in the past in terms of why the timeline is that long has to do with opening up the building, making sure that you have to do hazardous material abatement, open the building up. Once the building is open up, you can design it. Once the design is done, you can bid it. Once the bid is done, you can construct it. And when you put all of those timelines together, that's where they come out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the key in my mind is not that you shorten the timeline by handing it over to someone else. The key is can you shorten the timeline by essentially making sure that you don't miss any legislative deadlines and making sure that all of the work gets done and you push the design firm who has a lot of experience to complete their designs in a timely manner. So I can appreciate everyone's frustration with respect to where we are in terms of timeline, but There's nothing that stands out that says that we can shorten this in any significant way.
We did discuss.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
We did discuss this at length in the Public Health Committee meeting, and this was the focus, that because the building is going to have to be really looked at from the inside before you can do the design, you can't kind of we could, but it would be ill-advised to begin designing as though we know what that interior structure is, and therefore shorten the timeline. And if we already had that information, then you could already be moving to that stage. But that stage now has to be done on its own with a subsequent stage in order not to have to redesign the building once you get that further information. So I suppose that, you know, it did come up as a possibility, though there wasn't anybody pushing it, to go ahead and try to do some designs based on what you think might be there in order to speed up the timeline. The thought was, of the consensus seemed to be of the group, that if you did that, you might save some time, but you might not, and you would definitely cost more money, because you'll have to revise whatever you did originally to match what's actually there. So the degree of the deconstruction, reconstruction is much greater than I think had been anticipated with a building that had been previously used for a similar use. But there was asbestos in two locations, I believe, and additional questions about how to adaptively redesign the building.
Chair Bartel.
Do we have an estimate for all this on what we anticipate the project should cost?
Yes, I do have an estimate. That was submitted as part of the backup, and so the demo, renovation estimate is $3.7 million.
$3.7 million on the renovation? That's the full cost.
That's the renovation cost.
When you say that's the renovation, is that the full cost? That's like... That's all the rest of the cost from now.
No, the engineering is not in there.
Yeah, there's $180,000 for engineering.
Well, so if you haven't seen the estimate, I'd be happy to provide. It is part of the backup.
I haven't seen the full estimate, yeah.
Yeah. It is a renovation estimate. It is done on square footage. It's certainly my hope that that is the full cost, but it is not a full project estimate. It is a renovation estimate. So
4.4.
Right. So when you, the first thing I think that's number one, it is just an estimate. It is. We did talk to the architect at length. He wanted to be conservative in his estimate so that he was capturing all costs for renovation. It is broken out from contingency. There's a healthy contingency for both, I believe, architecture and for construction. But it is not a project, full project estimate. So obviously the acquisition cost is not identified and shown there. There is some. So that's the first thing I would point to say that. That's something that's not in
the... Well, in the 4.4, the acquisition's in there.
Yeah, it's 3.7 for construction.
For renovation.
For renovation.
You could make a resolution to put a cap on it.
Mm-mm.
So, and let me, if I could, Chair.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Just kind of to the point of the sequence of the project and the length of time and... One thing I, in creating the timeline, looked at very closely was how, and this was geared towards coming to the county and the legislature for the funding approval, and basically the procurement, because in this case, now that we know we have an environmental cleanup, we're going to have to procure a contractor to do that. And then we're going to have to award, and we're going to have to create a contract and come back for a contract approval. And so I basically was adding up not just the sequencing, but how many times we come back to the legislature and get the authority. So, I'm saying that partly for the timeline, but also just so that the legislature understands that we do intend to bring each piece of this project back and ask, we have to, we ask for the funding approval. So we have now a robust estimate, which I wanted because I didn't want to be in the dark on this, and the cost. And each step, major step, right, because there's three really identified, I believe, which is that we would have the contracting for the environmental cleanup, and we would have the GC bidding, and we would have the leasing and everything needed for the operations. And that's why I put it in bold. So if it is in the backup for the timeline, but I put those three things in bold because those are really, when it comes to coming back with resolutions, those are the major 3 points in the 5 years.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's funny. I think it's such a worthy project in terms of having family, basically, right, family emergency housing. It's critical. But it's also, there's an aspect of this that's frustrating in that we find out, you know, it all sounds great on the front end, let's just hurry up and buy this building, mm-hmm. which it was very
when
much.
When we were told it was $1 million project.
It was very much hurry up and buy this building. There wasn't, I don't think, adequate even negotiation on the purchase price. Mm-hmm. So we go ahead, we buy this building, and then with the idea that it's a, you know, it's a project that's sold as sort of this idea of a relatively quick turn that there's going to be collaborative money in, and now by the end, you know, it's not likely
million.
It's going to be more than that because mm-hmm. there's, you know, even this doesn't account for the full scope of it. And when you're thinking of it over 3 years, you know, cost escalations, etc. Like these are now prices, and I don't know. Like I don't know if we shouldn't have looked at some of the motels that were for sale and just things that might have been an easier turn than an old building that had issues. But it's just, again, it's frustrating that we get that we're here. It's kind of what I've talked about other projects, that it's kind of a slow bleed. You know, we find things out as the legislature, as they go, you know, and then it's too late to go back. It's never too late to go back, but then you waste it. So I guess I'm just frustrated with the timeline and frustrated with all of it, not with the intent of the project. I think mm-hmm. it's a great project. I think we need more of these projects. This isn't even enough, right, for what we have, for the need. And my sense of urgency isn't happening. I mean, it's happening in a vacuum looking at this project. It's not against inaction over years. I'm not feeling urgent because we haven't acted for years. I'm feeling urgent because it seems like 3 years to complete a renovation seems like a really long time. So, that's all.
Legislator Erner and then Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. I have a quick comment based on the discussion that had happened about this in the Housing Health Human Services Committee, which I had asked about any federal funds, and Legislator Uchitel, chair of that committee, later reminded me that the reason then Representative Delgado made an appearance was because it was he had sponsored the congressional legislation that brought ARPA funds to communities as small as ours. So I just wanted to put that on the record. My quick question is on the backup from, it might not have come to our committee, but it did come to the health, and since it's the same resolution, I'll mention it. On the costs, funding breakdown, I see the $700,000 roughly for our ARPA for the purchase, then there's a bond anticipation note listed, $200,000, SAM funds, $100,000. $500,000 city ARPA, which is what's before us right now, for total current project funds of just about $1.5 million. And then on the right of that, it says estimated shortfall $2.9. Is that just saying that's what you're going to come back to us after this to ask that we can to confirm our support for? Is that why it's calling it a shortfall?
This is kind of how I think in projects and in doing development previously. It's basically our sources and how much of the current the project cost that we know. Because the goal, of course, is 100% of your project cost as a developer. That's what we absolutely want. And that's what other funders who are already involved with us, such as the state and municipal grants, they also need to, before we can get into a contract with them, they need to see all of our sources and that they're committed sources, and then we can move forward with that grant. So it is an important goal, and the only place I can account, I mean, that's a fairly simplified estimate, but it shows, you know, our project cost estimate and then our sources, because that's, here's what it'll cost, here's how we're going to pay for it. That's what I'm trying to do. But when there's a shortfall, I need to put in that there's a shortfall to show that it's not there yet.
Thank you.
And that would be, the covering the shortfall would be either with county funds or with the HH, the federal funds at this time. Those are the two likely sources for covering that.
Yeah, so and
uncovered
just to
expenses.
Clarify, HHAP is a state source.
Oh, that's state.
Yeah,
okay.
It's going to be a mix.
Okay. So I would just say that if I had known the cost of this project at this level at the time we were anticipating purchasing this building, I would have said, yes, let's do it. It's such an important location. It has social value for the history of people, and I think it'll be a very important project at this site at this cost. I think we should also look at going after some of those motels because they can serve different populations, and it's additive at this point. So I think this is a both-and situation rather than an either-or. And I think that the effort to speed this up, I said in health and housing, yes, let's keep the pressure on, look for any ways, you know, if Public Works has capacity and they can team up and to use the strengths of people across the departments, great, let's move it along. But if this is a reasonable estimate because that's what it takes, then I think we just have to plow through it and do each of the steps. You know, if there are places, like if we can double up on procurement of this thing and something else, then I think the staff is ready to do that. But
yeah, I was going to a couple things. I was just going to raise the question whether or not the HHAP application, rather than thinking of it as slowing it down, couldn't it be happening concurrently? We're operating, thinking we're paying, but we're applying in the hopes that we get the money versus like applying and waiting.
All right, I'd be happy to answer. So just as far as to lay out HHAP, we did do an RFP for an HHAP consultant. My experience of having done HHAP for a different prior employment was it's lengthy. That was a relatively small application, and it was about 400 pages. It really, the application is only ready at the completion of pretty much DC bidding, full bidding plans, building plans, excuse me. Typically, they look for they look for a lot of things, like I guess, and you're really going to have to be project ready before you file the application, and then it becomes a competitive application. So as far as, I don't want to lose track of your question, I'm hoping.
I appreciate some insight into HHAP, but what I'm saying is, why couldn't we be moving forward with that application, getting project ready, and at the same time being prepared to move forward while we're waiting for the application to come in?
So I think the way I want to answer the best way I know is to hire a development consultant to complete that application. So we did do the RFP. We did not award because we...
What did they come back at?
They're about $90,000, as memory serves.
And what, in a successful, I mean, what level of funding did HHAP fund?
They potentially could fill the gap. They could fund all of it. So you're right. I mean
it's something... It's something worth considering, and certainly, I don't know if there's competitive bids on a rolling basis, all that. You don't have to go into it right now, but the idea of looking at the scope of what's been awarded and how competitive this application might be, it may be worth that. I'm also wondering when you're going to, when you're actually going to account for all the other costs that aren't accounted for in here, you know, the finishing costs, the furniture, the fixtures, the landscaping, the whatever has to be done to the property itself, if anything. All that's going to be an additional cost that's going to surprise the legislature down the road with another, I don't know, $500,000, depending on how many units and what you're looking at.
And of the list you just mentioned, the only one I really feel like I need to check for in that estimate is the furniture, just to make sure that was done. I just don't have it in my memory if it was put in there or not.
It's
and
not
it,
in there.
Yeah,
no.
And
it's
it is
your
also
engineering scope of work, but I don't
fixtures
know if it's the
aren't
cost
in there either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also a very preliminary estimate, so they did it on square footage price, and it basically would be just, there's been a few questions already about, well, is this in there, is this in there, and every time I've gone back to the architect, they've been yes, because they've done it on
square
a completed
footage
project based on square footage.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize there's probably not the level of detail we want at this point, but that's partly because they did it as a square footage estimate.
So what does it cost to build an apartment for a person? I know that's a bizarre question, but I mean, what is, because right now we're at about 120,000 if we have 37 units in there.
There's 37 units in there?
Wasn't it 37
no.
people?
No.
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 So
there's 29. Oh, there's 29.
What
oh,
we hope for is to have 37
people.
Not
yeah,
units.
Yeah, and we've already identified a few areas where that's going to be tricky. I can say that the existing building has 29 rooms. So that's a previous boarding house. So there's 29 rooms across three floors. But and we've looked carefully at that layout. We had the architect on site. We have a full set of existing plans that they created for us. We didn't have existing plans originally. So we know the square footage of each room, and we know the width of hallways, and we know that particularly when it comes to the stairs, there's some out of code issues for the stairs and the hallway around the stairs, and that's going to all need to be widened, and that's going to impact some of the rooms. So we hope for 37 people, but we're already seeing where some rooms are going to have to be either taken out or made smaller, and we are not sure we can at this point if we can get 37 people on. But we hope, because we know people need to do that.
So it's up to like 160,000 a unit then, if we break it into 29 people, just right. And you're
well,
in an elevator,
you're
right?
By person. You're still dividing by
I'm
people.
Still divided by people.
Right. Unit
and it'll need an elevator if it's three
family
stories? So it's handicap accessible? ADA compliant?
We're looking at creating a elevator between the basement and first floor. It would not be for all floors.
Okay. I mean, I know what my vote is just on the timeline, but were there any other questions? Okay. Yes.
And just, I think this may have been discussed, but just that this building, you know, folks in Kingston know it as a former boarding house, but it really has a much longer history than that, and it dates back over 100 years where it's always been used for some type of supportive care. And it was actually part of, it used to be a Dr. Saylor Sanitarium was on the, where George Washington School is now. And this was the House of Technology. So it was an interesting building in that it was, I think of it mainly as folks who were seeking respite for probably primarily mental illness at the time. And this was a place where they were allowed to do like basically crafts. In this building, so it has this over 100 years that it's been in the community in some form of service to folks in the community, and it's an opportunity to really invest in it for future use.
Thank you. All right, I'm ready to call the vote then. All in favor of passing resolution number
337? Aye.
Aye.
I'm opposed. Any abstentions? Thank you. It's a protest. It's too long.
There's too many people without places to go. Okay, resolution number 352, amending capital project number 482, countywide radio system, amending the 2023 capital fund budget. Motion for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Second, Legislator Erner. I don't think I have any questions on this. It's just that we need to get it done. Yes, Legislator Erner.
A short question and a longer one that I don't expect answered right away. There's a Dutchess County component that I saw in this resolution. Can you, anyone comment about that?
There is an ongoing discussion with Dutchess County relative to the government office of the PSAF, the EOC, to make sure that they're available for backup. That's what I don't know whether that's part of this resolution, but I know there's an ongoing discussion with respect to that. Dutchess County is in the middle of also rebuilding its environmental center, which is the operation center.
Thank you. And then the longer question, if I'm going to... So this matter contemplates generators, for example, when things shut down, and obviously the whole system is electrical. What are we planning for the long term when, realistically, physically speaking, the availability of electrical generating capacity might not be what it is, and the availability of fuel to run a generator to generate electricity might not be what it is, or what's the long term future of having a countywide radio system, for example? Have we put any thought into that?
I could speak to my experience with respect to the tower that we built in, just completed in Sorites. We looked at the size of the generator, its ability to essentially do a battery backup system, and sources of power. And what we were told was that you can use the size of the generator was capable either in diesel or in propane. We went with propane. And with respect to the power into the system, having a single tower offline is not necessarily that critical, although it is critical. And so we have both microwave on that tower and we have fiber to the tower, so that the communications can work. But I don't have an answer to your question is if we run out of electricity, I would suspect that if we run out of electricity that there'd be prioritization to essentially public radio system, public safety radio systems would be prioritized. And we did look at, we had conversations with a consultant about batteries. The difficulty is you don't know how long the power is going to be out and the system has to function. And so the only way that it functions on a regular basis is essentially to either go propane and or diesel.
And all towers have them. Ours in Newport that we were using, it was cell phones and everything that had a generator on it too. Even though we were told if it was catastrophic and it went down, it could ping off of other towers. It's just not as effective. So, Legislator Erner,
did you?
Well, there may be the possibility of solar generation on site with battery backup as a future element. That may be prohibitive for this amount of generation at this time, but in Shandaken, after Irene and Lee, it was the houses that had solar and solar batteries that were able to run their generators because the road fell out and people couldn't get to gasoline sources. So those who had on-site solar were the people who were able to keep going all week long, and probably where we should be headed for the future.
Makes sense. Legislator Erner?
Can we do some research about mechanical charging of critical electronic components? For example, like there's crank radios.
We can do some research on it. This is quite a bit of power that you need for these facilities to think that we're going to crank them in some way, shape, or form. That's a question of emergency management more than it is for me. We've been engaged in a number of discussions with respect to how to provide power to these facilities, not only as it relates to towers, but also as it relates to the Government Operations Center. The power demands are significant. They're not small, is what I would say.
If I could add on, I've actually looked at this because there are some interesting work in developing countries with bicycle power for various purposes, and you can pump water and do some things. But at some point, the amount of food that you have to provide to the people to power becomes actually a consideration. And so I think that I would concur with the director of planning that for something that's a large power draw, we should probably be looking for solar or wind on site as opposed to human powered on site. If that was the direction you were headed. But I do support the use of, playgrounds. You've got children, turning the wheels all the time. I think it's worth looking at, but it, then you become, you have to deal with safety issues about having a generator set up on a merry-go-round. Child labor. Yes. So, but I think we should be thinking out of the box and consider where there are places where we're wasting energy and stop
like
doing that.
On the floor with the air conditioning in the winter
Mm-hmm. I know somebody put a turbine in their septic, so not the gray water, and they generated some electric.
Every time you flush?
Cool idea. Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, I will call the vote on 352. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Last resolution, number 364, establishing a restricted capital reserve fund for the Government Operations Center of the County of Ulster under Section 6C of New York State. Motion for discussion. Legislator Erner, second. Chair Bartel. Chair Bartel, please.
So, first of all, I'm not expecting that this is going to move through in a rush. I mean, I think it's something that we need to talk about, particularly the number that I'm proposing to dedicate. Like, that, it's, at the moment, it's a placeholder. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to really speak with the executive offices about what they anticipate in terms of outside funding, if any, et cetera. Really, when we looked at what bonding for the project as a whole would cost, utilizing, which was confirmed with the executive office at the time, utilizing the full number of the project on an 18-year on an 18-year debt service, it's a considerable addition to the budget over every year. We have considerable excess funds. We just adopted a new fund balance policy that requires that we maintain a certain level and attempt not to exceed that level of excess funds in terms of unrestricted funds. That's the definition we're working within, unrestricted funds. This, we have long believed we had a capital reserve fund when in fact we didn't have a capital reserve fund. We thought we did, but we didn't, and it was being utilized without the legislature's approval. This is a bona fide capital reserve fund. It's a dedicated, restricted fund that would be for use for this purpose only. It doesn't have anything to do with approving the project. It is not the same thing as Legislator Stewart's proposal. Mm-hmm. Very different. That sets a cap. Mm-hmm. This doesn't say that there's a cap. If whatever number we pick, if we exceed that number, then we have to have a discussion about how to fund that number, whether it's additional bonding or adding to the now, as for then depleted reserve fund. Just think it's really important. Much of the unexpected revenue that we have in the fund balance really came out of COVID. Came out of, not directly, it came out of people being home and having extra money to spend, and to spend it here, came out of a lot of unanticipated costs. And frankly, we haven't used those funds for emergency services. I think this is a project that we all agree needs to happen. You know, I've been vocal about my concerns about the project costs escalating beyond what's even currently proposed, and I still do believe that that's very possible. And I think this is a way to provide a certain amount of, you know, safety and security for the next legislature. It's simply saying, it was arguable whether or not it was even going to come to this committee, because really this is really strictly, it's a ways and means resolution in that it's only about the funding. It has nothing to do with approvals for the project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where there's been some confusion. I do also want to say that I spoke to the chair of law enforcement, and I plan to refer to law enforcement, even though it doesn't have to go to law enforcement. I'm going to refer to law enforcement so I can really take questions and explain it to the members of law enforcement, just as a courtesy to the chair of that committee. So it will, that by necessity will make it another month, but it also goes to show that I'm not attempting to rush this through, and I do think we need to come up with the money, but I feel, but I feel very strongly that it is the most responsible way to budget for this right now. To commit to essentially restricting funds and paying without funding, at least a significant portion of the project.
And I'm actually hoping this sets a trend for other capital projects, rather than it being a wish list, that we do start providing funding for it. I think that makes a lot more sense, because
certainly
then at least
we have
know.
Yeah.
Is there a reason that the figure is $29 million, even though the current estimate is $32 million? Is it that you don't accept the current estimate, or that you would look for other sources of funding for parts of this?
No, Amber actually put together the number, and I believe she looked to things that we've already spent. You know, there's money that have already been expended.
Oh, so that's already taken out
of
the estimate.
So.
That makes sense.
And again, this doesn't speak to, you know, it's taking the numbers at face value. Again,
mm-hmm.
if we went over, it's no issue in relation to a restricted capital reserve fund. It would just mean we would have to determine how we were going to fund.
Right.
If we came in under, which would be fabulous, but again, given timelines and pressure, building pressures, et cetera, change of conditions, I'm not sure. That's one of my main concerns, is that we're, and in fact, when I talk to people, really, there's a lot of people who think that these numbers, while we're very grateful that the administration brought them to us in one place so we could see a real cost for this project, you know, there's a fear, if not an expectation, that it'll actually cost more. It's a big project. But if it does cost less, there is a mechanism for moving restricted capital reserve funds into another restricted account, but it actually requires very specific legislative action. Again, this is a fully restricted fund, and it would no, if we do this at whatever level we do it, it will no longer count when we're assessing what's in our unrestricted fund balance. It would no longer count as part of that. It's the equivalent of expending it, even though, because it's a promise of expending it. So again, I think it's really responsible, and I also, you know, as I explained in my conversation to the chair of law enforcement today, you know, I find myself in an unusual circumstance. I mean, it may be my most pro law enforcement resolution of all time, and it's certainly my most among my most conservative with a capital C resolutions of all time. It's very, I see it as just a very fiscally conservative approach in what I think, you know, I am seriously worried about what this county, and I'm not going to be here in this role, but what this county is going to be facing in the coming years. We have capacity issues. We have concerns about bridges, which have been discussed in this committee and elsewhere, and Given the number of bridges that, you know, are facing various levels of concern, I'm not talking about flags, but just that need work, which is at least half of the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
We know we're talking about additional employees, including for this project, several in the call center. I forgot the number. Everett told me it's 5 or 6 additional employees. You know, these are all things that are going to add up to significant additional costs. And again, just if we assume we're just going to bond for this, that, you know, looking at today's rates, that bonding the $30 million is enough to pretty much bust the tax cap if it were done all in one fell swoop. So, you know, if all things remained equal. But that the problem is that all things aren't remaining equal. We have additional costs. We have capacity issues. We have a lot going on. And we have the cash right now. And so I really think the responsible thing to do is figure out what the number is, and I don't know what the number is. I'm open to that discussion, and that definitely needs to be a discussion with the executive. Not a dentist specifically, but that side of the room. It needs to be a discussion with the executive offices as well, as like what is the number that we're actually comfortable locking in. It certainly will make it a different conversation as we're going through the project, rather than and we're bonding more and this like Elizabeth Manor already and we're bonding more and we're bonding more. It's like, okay, we have this fund here and this is what it's for and we're committed to this project and we're going to utilize this money for that purpose.
So is your recommendation that we take no action or that we postpone tonight and have those further conversations about the amounts?
It's up to you. I mean, again, you know that it's going to take, there will be at least a month because I'm going to make out of a courtesy with the conversation, which really came down to a courtesy for the members, so the members of that committee could understand. Because once the committee chair understood why it wasn't in the committee, she said, oh, I can see that. Again, there was even a question about whether to send it to this committee, but I'm like, it's, you know, it's public mm-hmm. works and it's a capital project.
And eventually
even though
they'll
it's just
pass
financing,
committee. Yeah.
I'll send it. But it really is strictly a financing resolution. I think that there was confusion about this actually weighing in on the project itself, which mm-hmm. it most definitively is not doing. Like, it's not limiting the project in any way. Whether, in fact, if I had put this in for $5 million, which I think is way too low, that's not saying the project can only cost $5 million. It's saying $5 million is going to be paid in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's like, it's not, it has no bearing. But I said I would send it there, which I will. So it will go there next month. I don't know how Ways and Means will handle it, but I think it'll take more than a month to figure out the numbers. So
the reason that I think that I lean in the direction of postponing or taking no action, which, you know, whichever you would prefer, but as the sponsor, but I have questions about whether we hold this whole sum of money versus some portion of it and have a plan to do some portion of bonding and some portion. Bonding is becoming less favorable, but I'm not sure it's unfavorable. And so I would like to hear the Ways and Means discussion, because I think we might end up with, maybe it's just a change in the number that appears in here, which is a simple amendment, but I guess I feel better holding to have that bigger discussion and understand what we're really saying than to just create
and
this.
And I think you're illustrating, and this is funny that this caused such controversy, I think you're illustrating why it shouldn't have gone to this committee or law enforcement either, because this committee's charge, and with all due respect, isn't to weigh in on how to fund the project per se. Like, that's not what this committee's charge is first and foremost, especially when we're that's a finance question. But I will defer to what this committee wants to do. I actually what the members other than me here want to do, like, and which includes you. Because ultimately, I don't think it'll make. We have to reach a consensus, and I know and I accept that things don't happen overnight. Like, you don't put in an omnibus giant resolution that's something people haven't seen before and expect them to just move just because it sounds or it feels good or someone tells them to. So I'm not someone that's in a rush. Like, I have been a patient legislator my whole term. Things have taken unlike
so
things take a long time. This is something we need to figure out before the end of the year, ideally much sooner than that. But I just think it's interesting that it's like it comes down to
I was going to say in my comments that I really appreciate your bringing this resolution to this committee, because it is a $32 million project, and to think that a $32 million construction project does not go through public works at all would be funny. This is just dealing with the funding on it, but the whole thing, I think, we care about. And not having a seat on Ways and Means, this is my opportunity to say that I think we ought to be thinking broad scope on this. I appreciate the resolution, because I think the resolution asked us to do that. But having asked us, then I'd like to really hear the full discussion before I say, yes, I really think $29 million is the right number, which is what a vote tonight would basically have me saying.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. And to add to what Legislator Nolan was saying, this, although it's a financial aspect of it, also seems to be opening the door to a new policy we could have around how we do capital projects, of which the financing is one part, and that certainly seems like it belongs in this committee. I have one technical typo to offer to correct. On page 3, the second resolve, the second to last, and the last word in the second to last line.
Wait, second resolve?
On page 3,
yeah.
Second resolve on that page,
yeah.
The last, second to last line, the last word there says 20 mine.
Oh, thank you.
Aww.
N and the M are together on the keyboard.
We don't even have to change that right now because the numbers are not together. But Michael's making it.
I mean, I will leave it up to the committee, but I'm comfortable moving forward. I don't like, and I never have liked, bonding. I feel it's a waste of additional taxpayer money. And as Chair Bartel said, we have funding available now to be able to allocate it in case in the future, I mean, we don't know what the future is going to be. It could, at any point, we could have a war. We could have another pandemic that this time doesn't pan out as well, where we're bringing in all kinds of sales tax that we actually, you know, something will happen that we don't have access to what we need. So I wouldn't mind moving forward on it. I don't know how Legislator Litz feels.
Abstain.
You're abstaining because, okay, so we don't want it to fail either. So, Chair Bartel.
Of this, minus the abstention, since two of the three would rather wait and it's going to go to law enforcement, I'm okay with waiting and including this committee at the front end of, you know, the conversation of how the numbers discussion works, because that's not necessarily going to fully, we're going to have to do some of that work not in a committee, like in conversation and work, and then bring the work back to committee.
So I would like to see this move forward more. I'd like to see equipment replacement funds. I'd like to see capital reserve funds.
This would be really significant. I mean, it's a significant project to fund in this manner.
Legislator Erner and then Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. Yeah, my main hesitation with moving forward is not understanding the impact on other things that we might want to draw off the unassigned fund balance to do. For example, we have this Housing Action Fund that's just been introduced to the legislature this month, and it was postponed in one committee, and anyhow, that's not moving this month, and we'll need to be drawing off that for that. So I'd like to, and I understand that's also a question for Ways and Means more than this committee. I am very sympathetic to the policy direction this is moving in terms of capital projects, and as Chair Petit had said, the other side of that for me, besides not liking to bond, thinking that's irresponsible, my understanding is we do it when it is responsible relative to the investment we can put for other funds, but for that matter, I might like to see those funds invested in projects in the community that, just like this, so rather than sitting in a money-making instrument, I'll just say. And but anyhow, so I'm ready to, I'd like to wait on this, I guess is where I'm at.
Did you want to respond to Legislator Erner, or, okay.
Legislator Erner, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think you raised a good point, and I think that the other resolution you're talking about is one that also deserves, I understand to Legislator Nolan's earlier point about trying to solve 18 years of problems in 18 months, it applies in that way too. Like that's a pretty robust program that's talking about a significant assignment, not a restriction, so it would have no effect on our fund balance policy, but a pretty significant assignment. And I think in both cases they're the kinds of things that require more conversation than, you know, one committee meeting the first time you see it, which is again why I'm patient enough to say, like, you know, I put this in not thinking it was going to pass this month. I didn't put it in thinking, okay, here it is and let's go. I put it in saying we need to have a conversation about all the things that we're contemplating doing with fund balance and all the commitments we might have and the implication and the capacity. Like, some of those things, some of those questions come up differently for different proposals and not just these two. I think your point about, which you may or may not have met exactly, but your point about the other proposal, for me, resonates in that I do think we have to think, when you say you want to think about how it affects the other, I think we have to think about all of this money in a, not a strictly holistic way, but understand that right now there's X amount of fund balance. And again, really understand, which I don't know that everyone does, the distinction in what a restriction does versus an assignment, because they're very, very different. One has an effect on our fund balance policy and one doesn't.
I would just say on the bonding issue that sometimes the bonding with a very low interest rate, you pay back with money that, but due to inflation and other factors, as I understand this, you end up saving money for the taxpayers. So it's at least an open question to me to, you know, have financial people at the time give me an indication in regard to whether or not it's reasonable to bond. And I think that it has been reasonable to bond up until now. Having said that, I would like to make a motion to postpone.
Or do you just want to take no action?
Well, I was going to make a motion to postpone pending the discussion in other committees and in Ways and Means on the details and implications of this. But if the sponsor would prefer that we just simply take no action, that's also okay with me.
I'll second.
Ready to make a decision.
Taking no action is fine. I guess then if there was some reason that we need, I can't imagine we'd need to do it in an emergency because I'm expecting it to go to long.
Okay.
So
I withdraw the motion.
Right, I'll withdraw the second.
Thank you. Okay.
I appreciate the conversation and the feedback, and I will stay in communication with the committee with details on the conversations regarding the number, and your point about the financials is something I was also considering that we need to talk about.
Great.
Under forthcoming resolutions, we do have the placing of a spending cap on the government operations building. The sponsor's not here, and we do want to have some discussion on the UCTC resolution doing the study and integration for connectivity, which involves bus shelters. Chair Bartel.
I know the sponsor's not here, but again, just because I heard confusion about the two and a feeling that people were thinking that the two resolutions were the same, I just want to reiterate that they're not the same. They're two different resolutions. I've had conversations with with the steward, and I need to call him again over time. And I really understand and appreciate his intent to open a conversation about really thinking about what capping a project costs. I mean, we do know that we can only cap a project cost until we collectively agree to break the cap by funding it higher. I mean, that's the way it works. There isn't like a mechanism to lock it in. But I do think it's a very worthy conversation, and I know in speaking with the executive's office and urging that there really be, if it's not value engineering, just a look at how do we bring this project price down from the start. And my understanding is that's what they're doing, but we haven't heard back yet, you know, on if there are changes to the overall project budget. So I just want to say that I do appreciate Legislator Stewart's intent to start the conversation. My understanding is that which is interesting, that's where we overlap. What he's really looking for is what's the number, and I'm looking for the number, but for a different reason. You know, they're two, you know, same question, but for different reasons.
Anything else on capping? So moving forward, we have a UCTC resolution, which is in the middle of the table. It's 2023-04. The intent of this resolution, would you like to explain it?
I don't know what the resolution is. I don't have the numbers.
This is 5307 formula funds.
This was, it was brought up that we have $8.7 million in funding that has not been expended, and the purpose of this was to do a study, and the County of Ulster portion of it was $500,000, but the project title says bus shelters. Do you have a copy of that?
I do. I don't see where it says bus shelters.
Page 4.
Page 3 here also.
Oh, I see. Yep. Didn't get to that yet.
Yeah, this is not a study. This is 5307, 5340 funds. These are actually funds for capital expenditures. So we have unprogrammed balance in the... We have unprogrammed balance in the region, and the region is moving to essentially move that unprogrammed balance to the various designated recipients that are in that region. That includes both Dutchess County and Orange County, as well as Ulster County. So this is not just bus shelters. This is a number of capital projects. I think you're only seeing one cleanup resolution. With respect to this, there was a prior resolution that had more money that was allocated to UCAT as well.
Mm-hmm. And the mention was that it might be up to 15 bus shelters, but some of them may be rehabbed, I think, during the discussion. But we were looking at least the sponsor of the resolution, or the capital funding resolution, the budget modification was for up to 48, so it was two per municipality.
Yeah, I wouldn't confuse the two. One has to do with essentially funding at the legislative level. The other one has to do with federal funding at the federal level, coming through the Transportation Council. So I don't know what your resolutions are dealing with as it relates to the individual work that's being done on bus shelters. I know that what we ended up doing is we asked for additional money for bus shelters coming from at the federal level.
Okay.
So that's where the money is coming from.
And this is just informational for us. We don't need any
action.
There's
no action that you can take.
I think
the total amount we requested was over $4 million. So the total amount that and understand how this works. That there's a decision at the regional level. There's a decision about the amount of money that's unprogrammed. That amount of money is then essentially put out to the public carriers, and those public carriers are then put in applications, and the applications that came in, I think we had somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 or $13 million. Those applications came in from three of the carriers, three of the designated recipients, including Orange County, Dutchess County, which is doing work on its garage, and Ulster County, which is also doing a substantial work on its. We're doing bus purchases as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing bus purchases. So this is additional federal money coming in to help the county meet its capital needs.
Great.
And it's by a methodology that's been set up at the regional level, something called a TMA.
Too much information now.
That's TMI.
TMA stands for Transportation Management Area. It has to do with populations, urban populations of over 200,000. And the three counties make up the transportation management area with really, I think there's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 800,000 in that area.
Okay.
So we certainly, what happens now through NPD reporting and others, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about between $19 and $21 million on an annualized basis comes into the region for transit services.
So as you're looking at this then, to capital purchase service, specifically, so buy more buses, but we're also looking at expanding our routes, which part of this says it's mobility and reliability, and the county was hoping at some point to go out and do an RFP to do not just a transportation study, but the county executive said she wants a plan. Can any of that, will this help facilitate that at all? Can we?
So I can tell you that the Transportation Council, the short answer with respect to this resolution, the answer is no.
Mm.
It's not dealing with those issues. The Transportation Council, through its Unified Planning Work Program, did dedicate its planning money, not its capital money, its planning funds to do a route study, a routing study. We did that, quite frankly, well before there was a discussion in terms of others asking us to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when there was changes in leadership associated with UCT, with UCAT, we pulled that study back and held it because we didn't know what direction we were going to take.
Okay.
We also, as you recall, had efforts by a company called VIA to get a grant for a micro-mobility grant, which was going to run microtransit in Kingston, New Paltz, and Ellenville. So we were concerned about doing work and doing studies with that grant still hanging out there. We were not funded. The county was a joint application with VIA. We were not funded for that. So now we've released that RFP. Is out there. It's on the street. It's out there. I believe it's due back. By the end of this month, it will be due back. And one of the reasons it takes a while for us to release RFPs is that FTA funding, which is used for this, requires a sign-off by NYSDOT with respect to the what's in the RFP, and we have to do what they call a comparison cost estimate, and a cost estimate in terms of what that costs. And so we've been in review with NYSDOT and those individuals up there prior to our release.
Okay. Legislator Erner.
May I bring up a couple of other public transit topics
Absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, Chair Petit, you and I had a tour of the UCAP bus garage after the Clintondale meeting, which was lovely.
It was unplanned.
And Paula showed us around.
Yeah.
And saw folks working on vehicles, saw dispatch, it's all great. One thing I saw that I'm concerned about, however, was that all the full-size electric buses were off the road, and including one we heard went to JFK Airport for repairs. We also saw that there were several smaller electric vehicles, mainly for riders in wheelchairs. Paul pointed out they had few seats. My question about the last part of that is to clarify, do we think that the reason, is there a concern that paratransit supply right now of what we can, people we can transport exceeds the demand, or are we lacking drivers? Is, because was, did you understand also, Chair Petit, that those vehicles are not being out on the road all the time, or maybe you could clarify, Director Rozier?
So when those vehicles were purchased, they were purchased, I think, for, I wasn't really involved in that purchase, but I think anticipating VIA coming in and doing like the one-off. So they're not really large paratransit vehicles, and right now there are only two companies that are actually making the paratransit, the electric paratransit vehicles right now. We have a meeting with Lightning Motors. I think that's going to be next week. They make one. We'll be checking with them. And Proterra also makes one, but with the knowledge that we have from our last bid on the large electric buses, Proterra didn't come out so well, so I would be hesitant to use them.
Mm-hmm. They're who you purchased the vehicles from before, the one we're having so many problems with.
Proterra, no.
No.
Those are new flyers.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I have a question about legislators. What's wrong with the big buses?
So they kept having a fault, and a fault code kept going off. So when this happened, the bus would just shut down. So it would shut down wherever it was. It would just shut down. Their recommendation at that point would be the driver was getting out and resetting it. So we said that was unacceptable, and until they fixed that fault code, we weren't going to run them. So they took the one bus and brought it down to JFK, where their facility is, to have the engineers look at it and see what was going wrong. They actually fixed that bus, brought it back, took the next bus down to do the same thing. We get it back here, and the fault code's
the first bus.
So rather than put all of them out on the road and take that chance, we've had to have them towed back twice. They're still off the road.
Do we have mechanics yet who are able to work?
All of the mechanics were trained
on the electric
on those vehicles.
Okay.
Two of them went to the plant, and then the it came with the buses. Then the mechanics or engineers from the plant came to UCAT and trained the rest of the mechanics.
So we're looking at this as a warranty issue,
right?
Just a real the problem.
Okay. May I raise my other topic now?
Yes.
Okay. So in the Economic Development Committee, actually missed this presentation but heard about it afterward, but the IPARC folks made a presentation which involved a proposed mobility hub more or less on the location of the transfer spot right now between the KS and the Mall bus in the town of Ulster at that facility. And that was the first I'd heard of it, so as far as I know, this committee hasn't heard of it, but now Economic Development has. I had a chance to speak with Dan Ahouse this afternoon briefly, who told me a little bit about the overall project planning that has been going through Economic Development and our planning department. So I would love to get a presentation about that. I did mention that to Mr. Ahouse, and I don't think it would be he who'd do it, but somebody from IPARC, and I'd love for our public transportation department to be informed as soon as possible about any plans there. I printed a copy of what was distributed at the Economic Development meeting, and I have.
Could we forward that to the rest of the committee? I know you had forwarded it to me, but and it also included going over the bridge, correct?
Yes.
So a real transit hub outside of the county, and because it's private, it can do that, unless they're going to be asking for public funds.
Well, I think you'll see here, but maybe Planner Doyle has some some advice for us at this point.
The only thing that we've seen is what was submitted and talked about at the Economic Development Committee. We have some support from IPARC 87 for site plan review and special permit review, but that's not on our agenda, planning board's agenda. So those documents are in front of the town board, the town planning board, but I have not seen any details with respect to the transit hub. We had discussions early on with IPARC 87 with respect to a transit hub at that location, but it was more talked about in terms of access to New York City than access across the river or access in and around the area. The access to New York City was a sort of like one-stop ride, basically, from New York City to IPARC 87. It was related, I think it was related anyway, to some of the marketing issues that they wanted to make sure of, as well as making sure that they had transit access out there. That discussion was not generally with UCAT, it was generally with Trailways with respect to that. So that's where that discussion went into. I would say that the amount of housing being proposed, which is now 860 units, changes dramatically the transit discussion for that area and its location.
I'd like to share just with the committee and the administration some concerns that I have, just having flipped through this briefly, but I know we don't have a representative from IPARC here to ask, but I would want to be sure that we know this hub is proposed to be on private property, for example, just like Kingston Plaza is right now, and that's the major hub for this part of the county, and I would want to know how public access would be guaranteed as though it were on county-owned or other public property, if especially we're operating public buses in there. And another question I would have is how we'd ensure that expanding transit there, which if you see that it's a pretty substantial operation they're talking about, it's a lot more than just having KS and mall bus meet right now. I would want to know how we would ensure that in order to accommodate this enormous development there, that we wouldn't inhibit or diminish transit services needed in other Ulster County communities. So those would be my concerns to bring to the developer as we think about this, initially anyway.
Sure, Bartel.
If I think it's already been asked, but if Michael could get this and circulate it to this committee, maybe even the whole legislature. I mean, it doesn't hurt. I mean, this is this part. It doesn't hurt to send it to the whole legislature.
Of course.
Thank you.
And I can't seem to find the IU7, but I will find it and forward it to all the members of the committee. So. Okay.
I'll get it later.
Thank you for bringing that to us.
Yeah.
Can I see that? Yes, please. Yeah, filled it everywhere. So, anything else to discuss?
Hearing none, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Thank you.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Time ended.
7:53. It's my favorite way to keep a calendar.
Yes,
and I
ask,
like, this will probably only last me this year.
My daughter used them for school, and I have them. I just pulled their first pages out, but they're basically.